Believe in yourself. On this Memorial Day weekend, we celebrate and honor one of the greatest generation, a true American hero, Mort Harris, who passed on May 5th, 2021, at age 101. Mort grew up in Detroit, Michigan, joined the Army Air Corps in 1941 at age 22, and became a pilot. A highly decorated pilot, he commanded a B-17 bomber and was nicknamed the Berlin Kid in recognition of his 33 successful flight missions over Germany. In November of 2017, he was awarded the Legion of Honor by the French president for his heroic efforts 77 years ago in helping save France during World War II. His name, Mort Harris. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible on WJR with our special Memorial Day weekend tribute to the legendary Mort Harris.
On the way into the office this morning, I was talking to a colleague about this event. And this is a person that I called when I received a call from Michelle Becker saying Mort had had a little bit of slip up and needed a little help at his house. And I was just putting up a simple little railing somewhere. And so I called this person who I knew would know a contractor, and we had a contractor come out and install this small railing. And I followed up a couple weeks later and said, did you send a bill to Mort or his family, or do we need to take care of the contractor? And he said, the contractor got to know Mort. And he said, that man is a hero. And there will be no bill for that man. He's paid all his bills. It's true.
I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. And we're talking to a true American hero, Mort Harris. Mort, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Nice to be here, Jack.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
Yes, you can do that. And when I was born at the Children's Hospital in Detroit, my parents had a little two-family flat that I can see on the other side of the Ford Hospital on Kipling and the Boulevard. And that's where I began life. I spent 5 years there. It was a two-family flat that my father had, and he owned the flat, and he leased half of it to someone else. And the someone else turned out to be a mother and a father and their daughter, who was about maybe 3 years my senior. And she taught me the ABCs when we went to the Thurkel School. She would hold my hand and we would walk to 14th Street, where Thurkel School existed and still does. And my first experience at Thurkel School was that I was defending some girls who were being pushed around by a bully, and I told him to cut it out, and he was bigger than me and he knocked me over. That didn't work.
Let's go back 76 years, December 7th, 1941, you're 21 years old, and Pearl Harbor happens. Tell us about that day.
Well, I was just working and going to school at the same time, and I wasn't in a hurry.
We interrupt this program.
And playing a lot of baseball, I think.
The Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, by air, President Roosevelt has just announced. The attack also was made on all naval and military activities on the principal island of Oahu.
It occurred to me that I had to do something more for our country, which appealed to me.
And just now comes the word that a second air attack has been reported on Army and Navy bases in Manila.
I was always a pretty impatient guy waiting for America to emerge.
We take you now to Washington.
Yesterday,
on December the 7th, I recall that very vividly.
1941.
I think it was a Sunday.
A date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
I was home doing homework as a student, sometime student, at Wayne State University. And I thought, oh boy, I'm going to get called into the service and I'm going to become a foot soldier. And I also have a problem in that I very often become a victim of a cold or a flu. And it occurred to me that if I was a foot soldier in World War II that was about to commence, I would probably be living in the trenches. And I had read a good deal about, I've always been a reader, thanks to that girl who taught me to read. I thought, what can I do besides being a foot soldier? I looked around and I began to read everything I could in the dictionary and so on about being in the Army or the Navy or the Marines. And I finally decided that it would be a nice idea to learn to fly an airplane. And I enlisted in the Army Air Corps and I took tests to become an aviation cadet. They didn't have an Air Force Academy yet. It took the better part of a year to become a graduate pilot. I finished up in Lubbock, Texas, as a twin-engine new pilot, and I was a second lieutenant. Now I was assigned to learn how to fly a B-17 Flying Fortress built by Boeing, which had a crew of 10 and 4 engines and carried up to 7,000-8,000 pounds of bombs. And I was getting myself equipped to bomb over occupied Europe. And that took quite a while. And the Boeing people sent me to a school in Seattle, Washington, where they built their airplanes. And I learned how to be an airplane commander as a leader of 9 other human beings with whom I had never had any association. And these 9 became my crew. And we flew in that airplane and learned how to handle it as a team together. It worked very well for me. I didn't turn the world over again, but I could do it very well.
Let's jump to June 6th, 1944, D-Day. What did you do that day, Mort Harris?
It was a very dangerous kind of a circumstance in that we had almost no escorts, fighter escorts. The P-47, which was the one with the radial engine, was escorting us until they got to the western border of Germany. And they couldn't go any farther. So they turned around and went back to England, where I was based, and they got out just beautifully, those fighter pilots, but they really didn't do much for us. The casualties were massive, and the Luftwaffe was strong, headed by Hermann Göring. When I arrived there as a new pilot with crew in the 95th Bomb Group, I asked the squadron commander how many people have made the required 25 missions. And the squadron commander responded, if the first fellow comes back tonight, he'll be the first human to do it. And I thought, well, what have I gotten into? I just wanted to get out of heaven. I wanted to get a good night's sleep and a good meal. And I bought something I didn't understand. The average pilot and crew lasted about 14 missions at the time. Then they were shot down by the Luftwaffe. You had to perform all kinds of evasive action when you saw the black anti-aircraft coming up at you, because this could kill you, and particularly if you're full of fuel, because they hit the wings, which had no protection. And all my acquaintances that I had met by this time were all of a sudden strangers. New crews came in that were totally green. We had a P-51 Mustang that was developed by the Air Corps, and it was a wonderful aircraft, except that it had an engine that was incapable of doing much more than the engines on the P-47. And then the British government had capacity at the Rolls-Royce plant, and they begged the Americans to permit the use of the Rolls-Royce engine in the P-51 Mustang aircraft. And the head of the Air Corps, a fellow named Hap Arnold, a general, said, "No, I'm not going to use a foreign engine." So with that, we continued to die every day. Finally, we began to get Rolls-Royce engines, and suddenly everything changed.
We're talking to Mort Harris, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Weeks ago, I was flying, and we were at 35,000 feet. And the pilot said the temperature outside was 80 below zero. Mort, those B-17s, how did you guys stay warm in those planes?
We didn't. My fingers were all frozen. I have a tough time now every time the weather gets cool. I have to have a good pair of gloves around.
Twice you went in the drink in the North Sea.
Well, one time I don't even want to count that. I was near the shore and had to land on a beach. I really didn't get into the North Sea. But one time I really did. I realized that the instruments were good, but I had two engines shot out. The rudder was shot off of the big B-17. I couldn't turn right or left except using the ailerons. I didn't know how I would approach that because I'd never done that before.
Where is the red gun? Can you see it? Down! It comes in!
In any event, I called Air Sea Rescue from Great Britain and I told them I was descending with just two engines and it had four dead boys. We really got shot up badly. Looked to me like there were 6 or 7 foot waves. And the airplane broke in two. And we let the four boys go down with the ship. But we knew they were all dead. We didn't have a chance to bail out. We were too low. The Air Sea Rescue appeared. And we only had six left in our crew by that time. Four were deceased. Shot full of holes, young kids, 18, 20 years old. It was a growing up experience. I've had that with me all my life.
Can you share with us the now famous, after 73 years, mission over France?
Yes. Usually you went in your group, you went in with about 20 to 25 B-17 Flying Fortresses, but this is a different kind of a mission. And instead of flying with groups of B-17s that might be a couple thousand feet wide, I just went in by myself. I was the first of 12. There was an open clearing that was created by France, people who called themselves the Maquis. France's idea of the Navy SEALs. And these big brute fellows cleared the area out of about 200 meters. And the Germans had been using that area. What the idea was, for us to drop very low altitude, like 500 feet, and instead of having bombs aboard, we had cannons. So we had great big parachutes. And I dropped my cannons first. I managed, by mistake, to hit right in the center of the 200 meters. I started them off, that was my first bomb drop. And then our idea was to escape off to the right and try to get back to England. And then the Luftwaffe came, and they decided to give us a good spanking. We lost some of the 12.
You also led a 90-plane mission, 900-plus men, to break the Warsaw-Poland blockade.
And we were trying to help the Poles who were locked into Warsaw. And the Germans had a tight ring around Warsaw, Poland. I was now the leader of a great group, the biggest one I ever had. And we dropped at about 12,000 feet, and it was a success. And we dropped all sorts of supplies and ammunition to the Poles who were imprisoned, fresh water, everything they needed to live. And we went on to Russia. A U.S. ambassador, Averell Harriman, had made an arrangement with Stalin to land on metal sheets that they laid down over the top of the sugar beet fields. And they were about 50 feet wide, these sheets, and tried to give us about 5,000 feet to land.
Mort, when you came back to the States, what was the one meal you wanted? What was the one thing you craved?
A hot fudge sundae with whipped cream from Sanders. I dreamed of that. It's a crazy thing, though. That's what I wanted. And there was a place on Parkside with my family near the University of Detroit. And I had a little car, and I drove down to a place where I knew I could get a hot fudge sundae on Woodward near the boulevard. And I went in and I asked for a hot fudge sundae with chocolate ice cream, and I want two dips. And I had three rows of combat ribbons on my left chest. And a lady who was working there had no idea about what I was. I might have been an usher in a theater to her. And she said, "You can't get that here anymore." I said, why can't you? She said, "Listen, mister, don't you know there's a war on?" I said, "That's what I heard." She gave me one dip, and then I discovered that in Sanders, where I had this one dip, that about 20 feet away there was another counter, different people managing the other counter, and I went over on the other side and I bought another one with one dip. But so I had a double dip chocolate hot fudge sundae with whipped cream.
And God blesses you with Edith. And then three sons.
Correct.
Tell us about Edith.
She was beautiful and very smart and very young. And I was now about 25 or 26. I'd been to combat. And I've had some life's experiences that most people don't. I was invited to go to a party in Palmer Woods. And I met a beautiful, but very, very bright young woman who was about 19 years old, and we liked each other, and she was a student at the University of Michigan. I said, "You know, it would be nice if we get to know each other, but I spent about 60 to 70 hours working in a family business that I came back to. It would be a nice thing if you like nature." She said, "What are you talking about?" And I said, "Well, I know of a little lake that has a path around it, and I could park my car and we could walk around a little lake," and it was springtime. Seemed like a good idea, and she agreed. And we had a nice talk, and that was the beginning of our life together. We married. I did not make a mistake. She was just a great wife, and she had a heart that wasn't very strong, and I wanted to make life nice for her, but she was rather sickly. And I was doing business now all about the world. I was doing business in Milan, Italy. I got a telephone call from my wife's brother on a Saturday at midnight to tell me that I was a widower. I lost her. Her heart gave out. And two of my boys were in university elsewhere. And my youngest was 15, and he was with his mother, and he gave her artificial respiration. And I lost her. He did what he could.
We're talking to Mort Harris, a quintessential member of the greatest generation. Mort, a couple convinces you to go on a trip. Changed your life again.
Well, 4 years later, I was invited by the head of the Minerals and Alloys division of a large German corporation. They asked me if I would like to go with them to India. I said, that's a nice idea. And a couple of weeks after that, I got a telephone call from my friend. He said, you know, that I've been thinking about this trip we're going to go on, the three of us, and my wife has a very dear friend who has lost her husband in an auto crash. She has three young children, and she's German. And so I had a lot of things to think about then. And I did, and I thought, well, I'd try it, and I'll go there to where my friend lived, which was on top of a hill in an old castle, which he had rebuilt. And there was a foot of snow. So I got to the house, and the taxi driver said, I'm not going up that roadway, mister. You have to do that yourself. I had two suitcases, and it occurred to me that I'm going to meet this woman whom I knew nothing about. And my friend opened the door, ushered me into his house. And when I got in there, there was a very beautiful woman sitting in the middle of four little kids. Then I looked a little farther, and there was one seat on the other side of the table that was empty. And here was a very unattractive lady who was much older than me. And she was going to be my seatmate, I thought. Well, now, how do I get out of here, go back to the States as fast as I can? And as I continued to eat the meal, I discovered that the beautiful one disliked children, and the other one was the caretaker for those kids. So that was a much better arrangement. I found out that I was marrying a very fascinating woman, my wife, Brigitte. And we talked about all kinds of things together. We got to know each other. We liked each other. She had never been close to an American before. So I now knew Brigitte, and we were now good, dear friends, she and I. And I didn't know how things could work out because I had never been faced with young kids living in Germany. Boy, this is such a long time ago. And I really wanted her to come to America because there was nobody else I had or thought about even. Finally, she agreed to do this for 2 weeks. And I said, bring your three kids with you. She became an American citizen eventually and raised her kids to become Americans, all three, and so are mine. But they all cared about each other. They liked each other.
We're talking to Mort Harris, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula. Mort Harris had lost his beloved wife at a very early age. But he found a new beginning in the darkness of war and convinced Brigitte to marry. No one could know she was to marry someone who would become an international hero.
Today we're here to honor Mort as he receives a Knight of Legion of Honor, an honor that's over 215 years old. Mort was notified of this in a letter, which he asked me to read this morning. Through this award, the French government pays tribute to soldiers who did so much for France and Western Europe. 73 years ago, you gave your youth to France and to the French people. Many of your fellow soldiers did not return, but they remain in our hearts. Thanks to your courage, and to our American friends and allies, France and Europe have been living in peace for the past 7 decades. You saved us. We will never forget. For us, the French people, you are a hero. Gratitude and remembrance are forever in our souls. To show our eternal gratitude, the President of the French Republic has decided to award you the Legion of Honor, created by Napoleon in 1802. It is the highest honor that France can bestow upon those who have achieved remarkable deeds for France. Thank you for what you did, and congratulations. Signed, Vincent Florani, Consul General. Congratulations, Warren.
Mort Harris, what are you the proudest of?
I think my service to our country in World War II, and I was the most junior squadron commander that he had under him up four. A colonel from West Point said, I hate to tell you this, Harris, but I'm going to lose you. I said, why? He said, you're doing a wonderful job for a young fellow, and you've had this massive combat record. He said, but another fellow has had a similar experience to you in the service. He's a couple of years your senior, and he's asking to come back for another tour of combat duty. I said, you mean there's somebody that wants to do this twice? He said, yes, and you are the least senior squadron commander, and I'm moving you up to a wing. And what am I going to do there? He said, you're going to become the intelligence officer and pass on information from the division head to all those leaders of the wing. And he said, I don't know what else to do with you. You've got so many points and you've had such a combat record that nobody else has one like it. He said, but I put you in for a major. I'm 23 years old. I'm going to be a major from combat. Just a kid, I'm just beginning to shave well. So I thought, well, this is a full colonel is telling me this. What do I do? I said, yes, sir. And I never met the colonel in charge of the wing. And he said, I've told this fellow about you and your history. It's remarkable. And he'll continue with you being moved up from captain to a major. And you'll go to work there right away because we need you. Do you know that I spent about 4 months or 5 months there, and that fellow never came down to talk to me, and I thought he just let it drop through the cracks. So I decided, I have so many points, I'm going to go home. I could do it whenever I wanted to. I had more points than almost anybody in the service. And I was assigned to Washington, D.C. as an intelligence officer. And I took that job, and I met a major general. He interviewed me because he was taken with the fact that I had so much combat and I was such a young fellow. And he said, I don't know for sure, what can I do with you, Harris? He said, you're only a captain. You ought to probably be a lieutenant colonel, but that's ridiculous. But you're going to be a major. Or you were going to be. But you've now left your job and you came to America, and so you don't have that fellow backing you anymore. I said, well, he wasn't doing anything anyway, so I thought I might as well come home and see what I could find in Washington. And then about 3 weeks later, he called me up and he said, I've got a job for you. He said, I thought about this because I never met a fellow like you in the first place. He said, I've got a job for you. I said, what would that be, sir? He said, well, we're attempting to make a single service out of the Defense Department in America. And we're getting all the senators we can, all 100 of them, and everybody who had been a member of a cabinet that's still alive and can still speak a full sentence. And we're going to analyze the hell out of you, and all of us are going to determine, is this a good idea or not? Every morning, you look out the window there where our office is. There's a little boat that'll take you across the Chesapeake and land on the other side. You walk up to the Senate office building. He's telling me this story, and I thought, this is out of a fairy tale. And he said, I want you to write down what these people said. Each day, you come to me and talk to the WAC in front of my office, and I'll call you in. We'll talk about it. No, I'll go on from there. So I can't promote you. I'd like to, because I like you. He said, but you're not going to get a promotion, but you'll have a learning experience the rest of your life. And when you leave the service, whenever that is in your mind, I'm going to write a letter for you because I think you've done something Herculean in your life, and I'm going to pay you for it, even though nobody ever did before. And that's what I did every day for about 6 months. And it was fascinating. He was just a wonderful guy. His name was St. Clair Street. He was a West Pointer and he had intellectual curiosity. He had an important job. And he wrote a letter for me. And he gave it to me.
Here's a portion of that letter.
It's only two.
Your combat record, with the achievement of being the only American airman to complete successfully 8 bombing missions of Berlin, your volunteer mission to Warsaw, Poland, in which you led the 8th Air Force as command pilot, dropping supplies to the Polish from 12,000 feet, stands alone as that of an accomplished airman. This record, plus one of excellence while attached to this headquarters, has reflected great credit on yourself, on the Army Air Force, and is keeping with the highest tradition of the military service. Major General St. Clair Street. Dated November 15th, 1945. This is Anything Is Possible on WJR with our special Memorial Day weekend tribute to the legendary Mort Harris. We lost Brigida in the summer of 2016. We're taping this in the WJR studios in the Golden Tower of the Fisher Building, and two blocks just to the west of this building, a new cancer institute named after her.
My Henry Ford Health System, of which I was a board member, still am, I guess.
And you donated $20 million to them for that. Why, Mort?
Because her death was so horrible. To me, it took 22 months for her to die. She knew she was dying each day. And nobody knew how to stop pancreatic cancer, and still do not to this very moment. So she died in vain, and I thought it was such a horrible thing, and I watched her die for 22 months. And I couldn't stand it. And I had made a lot of money, and I'm going to start becoming a philanthropist.
And they've broken ground on this 187,000 square foot Brigida Harris Cancer Pavilion on 300 acres of land.
And they're going to do it. And I'm involved in it. I decided to do this in memory of Brigida.
Mort, in a couple months you're going to turn 98. And recently, God has blessed you with another lady, Sandy Morrison.
Sandy is sitting here, and my wife, Brigida, had been close to her, and vice versa, and they liked each other. And one time when I was on my way to the bank, I was at an intersection across from my office. There were 3 lanes of traffic going north, and this woman was on the phone and going like bat out of hell. And she whacked into my car and turned it around. I was buckled in, fortunately, and it was drizzling. And I was standing outside of the median there, across my office in Broomfield Hills. And Sandy drove up and saw me standing there in the rain. And she said, "Well, Mort, what are you doing walking around in the rain?" I was a little fuzzy, I guess. And she took me home to Brigida. So I thought, well, we ought to know each other, I guess. This is after Brigida passed away several months. And she said to me, or I said to her, maybe we should get to know each other. But anyway, we had lunch together someplace in Oakland County. And you won't believe the rest of the story. So we were driving down the street. And would you believe I had a stroke, which has been with me forever since. And she's driving the car. She said, "I'm taking you to Henry Ford Hospital in West Bloomfield. You may have had a stroke." I said, "Oh, come on." When I began to talk to her, I began to make sentences to her. I didn't know what I had said, but I didn't finish sentences. She tells me this. But she is now taking me to Henry Ford, West Bloomfield, where they determined that I had a stroke. This is the beginning of our relationship. And I discovered that there's a lot of depth to Sandy, a great deal. And here we sit together.
Let's jump. Tuesday, November 14th, 2017, 250 of your friends gather at the Cranbrook House. The Consul General of France from Chicago comes to give you this Legion of Honor medal. What was that day like, Mort Harris?
Unbelievable. I never thought there would be a day in my life that was like that. First of all, I thought I'd get just my family and a few friends, and maybe I'd have 50 people come to celebrate by getting the French Legion of Honor, which is the same as the U.S.
Presidential
Medal of Honor. Yeah, same level. It's the highest that the French could offer.
I'd like to now introduce the Consul General of France, Guillaume Lacroix. Guillaume?
Monsieur Morton Harris, au nom du président de la République française, je vous fais chevalier dans l'ordre national de la Légion d'honneur.
And I really told everybody that I'm really accepting it for the other 11 pilots and crews, not just me. I was just having to be the leader. It was a very heady experience. And my friend, who was is chairman of the Cranbrook school system, which I have always been very close to, and he and I became very dear friends. He got up and introduced me and the representative of France. That representative advised me that they had never had such an experience in France before, where the two countries had worked together, and they did. We fit like a hand in a glove on this mission.
That was the legendary Mort Harris, an American hero who passed on May 5th of this year. An incredible story, an amazing life, with a history reaching back to 1920. The classic story of love, bravery, and victory of a Flying Fortress fighter pilot who gave the United States and the Allied forces a name to celebrate. And I'm Jack Krasula, and on this Memorial Weekend, thanks again for joining us. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spahoma.